hours after President Donald Trump told reporters at the G7 summit in France that he had second thoughts about escalating the trade war with China. The White House said his response was misinterpreted. A spokeswoman on Sunday said Trump actually meant that he wished he had raised tariffs on Beijing even higher. Trump on Friday set an additional 5% duty on some $550 billion in targeted Chinese goods.
Conservative former Congressman Joe Walsh joined the 2020 election race on Sunday, becoming the second Republican to challenge President Donald Trump. In his campaign video, the Illinois Republican criticized Trump as a bully unfit for office. A recent Reuters Ipsos poll showed 87% of Republicans approve of Trump's performance in office.
Police pulled handguns on protesters on Sunday as violent clashes returned to Hong Kong's streets. Sunday was the second day of confrontations in the Chinese-ruled city after 10 days of relative peace. Tear gas returned to the streets and water cannon were brought out for the first time in running battles between police and brick-throwing anti-government protesters.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's August the 26th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in again to another edition of The Opening Bell. Here we are with another business weekend, another business day getting underway, and lots to cover this morning. We'll have the latest on the U.S.-China trade war momentarily, driving the markets this morning. A little bit later in the program, Matt Bragg will be here. He's the Director of Data and Policy at the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. The Illinois Innovation Index is out, the research and development issue. Some positive numbers on that. Matt will be with us at about 5:38 this morning. On this Monday, we generally do a CEO or founder spotlight, and today Thomas Kearns is here. He's the founder of Bitspace in Chicago. If you're not familiar with Bitspace, you soon will be. A place where kids and teens go to get their hands-on learning on tools, both regular tools and tools of technology. They could be the future innovators and inventors, and we'll have Thomas here this morning in our first segment just momentarily this morning. We'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Investors will no doubt be keeping a close eye on Wall Street this week, after stocks plunged on Friday after President Trump ordered U.S. companies to find alternatives to doing business with China. This morning, the president claiming at the G7 that China has contacted the U.S. and wants to return to the negotiating table. There's been no confirmation about that from China. And we've heard this before. Before leaving the G7, though, the president said we would raise existing duties on $250 billion in Chinese products to 30% from 25% on October 1st. He also says tariffs on another $300 billion of Chinese goods, which start to take effect on September 1, will now be 15% instead of 10%. But again, we'll wait to see if China really has contacted the U.S. and whether or not they do want to return to the negotiating table. There has been some indication that China is looking for a way to calm what we've been seeing over the last few days. The Chinese vice premier says his nation looking for a calm end to the trade war with the U.S. But again, no full details on what that means. This morning, as we look at the markets, they're reacting to this a little bit. Dow futures are up 126 points after being down nearly 300 points overnight. S&P futures up nearly 11 points, nearly a third this morning. NASDAQ futures are up nearly 0.5%. In Europe this morning, a mixed day. It looks like a mixed day unfolding there. In London, lower by about 0.5% on the FTSE, but higher in Germany and in France. And in Asia, a rough day all around. In Japan, the Nikkei ending down nearly 2%, nearly 2.25% actually. The Nikkei down to 449 points. In Hong Kong, down nearly 2%. The Hang Seng down nearly 499 points. In China, markets off by about 1%. Oil in the United States is trading at $54.56 a barrel, which is up about 39 cents. A couple of other stories this morning. A resurfaced photo of the founder of the Jimmy John's restaurant chain, John Leoto, has sparked renewed calls for a boycott of the sandwich chain. Photo of Leoto is posing with an elephant he apparently killed It's been making rounds on social media several times over the years, but on Friday started trending again on Twitter, leading to the hashtag Boycott Jimmy John's. In the past, Leotel has defended his action by arguing everything he did was legal and that all of the meat was eaten. He also said he no longer hunts African big game. Disney shops are coming to Target. The entertainment and retail giant has announced they'll open 25 Disney shops inside Target stores. What the companies are calling shop-in-shop locations will open October 4th at Target stores across the country. The Disney shops will be near the kids' area where kids' clothing and toys are located. A Disney-focused website, target.com/Disney store, went live yesterday. Disney shops are expected to open in 40 or more Target stores by October of 2020. Let's begin this morning with the founder of BitSpace in Chicago. Kids and teens get to use the latest tools and technology at BitSpace. They may very well be the next generation of entrepreneurs and inventors. With us this morning is BitSpace co-founder and director Thomas Kearns. Thomas, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
We've been looking forward to your visit today, checking out BitSpace, kind of watching videos, seeing some of the things that have been going on there. It's a very exciting project. Let's begin at the beginning. Tell us about BitSpace. What is it? How did it get started?
Yeah, BitSpace is a youth-only maker lab. So not unlike some of the great maker labs that we have in the city, M-Hub, Pumping Station 1, all the same tools and things going on, except for this is just for kids, so 18 and under.
And the kids are doing all kinds of different projects. They're making all kinds of stuff. I mean, I've seen the kids are walking around with power tools, and then there are other kids on computers. I mean, it's just a wide range of different things they're creating.
Yeah, it's, you know, making today, you might be making physical things, but the computer is intensely involved. And if you're making computational things, the benefit of learning about making physical things, so is this mutually beneficial relationship and having all of this going on in the same place.
The kids who at least the ones I saw in the promotional videos that I've seen, they seem very comfortable with all of the tools. Do the kids coming in have some level of knowledge before they get going, or do you teach them from the beginning?
Most of the kids don't. Some do. They may be introduced in school, but by and large, they don't. And so we have we call it a kind of boot camp. All kids that come to BitSpace do a core set of activities that introduce them to everything from the wood shop to the virtual reality lab and in between.
Where did the idea come from?
I have a kind of unique background. I'm formally trained as an architect, practiced for many years. And around the time that the economy started to go bad, I went back to school and got a degree in software engineering, focused on making video games. And then over the course of my career, I've been teaching. So I was a professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology in the College of Architecture for 13 years before I resigned to do BitSpace full time. And in the architecture program, being a specialist in computation. And so I've been teaching bigger kids how to do these things, getting them ready for careers. And I realized I have a daughter. I think she was about, well, kindergarten is really when it started. I ran a art project with a kindergarten class trying to teach 30 CPS kindergartners how to use Adobe Illustrator, which is a professional graphic design tool. It failed miserably, but there was a seed of something there. It was clearly these kids, they got really close enough to know that if, you know, the curriculum were developed a little bit better, that they could actually do these things. The idea kind of started there. A couple years later, I found my partner, an investor, and BitSpace was off to the races.
And it's been about 4 years, right? Four or five?
This is our fifth, be our fifth year of summer camp, just finishing in a week or two here.
Give us a walkthrough of what, if we were to transport ourselves right now into a summer camp, what would we see?
Well, it's pretty early, so they're just getting started. So you have that boot camp that I was talking about. You know, for all the kids that haven't been there before, they're going through a set of stations. So they're learning about drilling and driving and cutting. They're learning about drawing on the computer to be able to control laser cutters and tools that digitally fabricate things. and getting a little bit of introduction into some of the computational stuff that we do. Meanwhile, the kids that have been there before are kind of plotting what the week's going to be about. And there's a theme or some sort of direction that's given, but by and large, the idea is that we don't work from kits, that the kids work on what they want to work on and the way that they want to work on. And so we're there to facilitate that. So there's probably quite loud downstairs. It's a wood shop, and we call it the sort of dirty space, and upstairs where the computers are at, in the clean space, 3D printers and such.
These are all the kinds of jobs I can imagine them being. They are currently, but they will be for sure in the future. These are the kinds of jobs that will be running our economy in the future, won't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So why... to talk to us again about why it's important to make sure that the kids who have this knowledge or want this knowledge can get it, because there are a lot of kids that can't.
Yeah. I think to step back a little bit too, there's the applied knowledge that's appropriate for, you know, these careers that we imagine. But there's also the basic design, the idea of design thinking is, you know, prevalent throughout business today. And the idea that learning some of these fundamental ways of looking at the world can help you not just in, you know, being able to make a chair, but really in everything that you do, you know, creative problem solving, critical thinking. So from that standpoint, it's really relevant for everybody. And then at the same time, we're getting those kids that, you know, have an aptitude ready to, once they get to college or they get to a high school where they're, you know, really have some support behind them, they can really take off. But we can get them started when they're 6 or 7.
And they're smart kids. They're really smart kids.
Yes, they are.
I saw a couple of them interacting with you and interacting with the cameraman and talking about the projects that they were working on, explaining stuff that I don't even understand, and yeah. I've been to college.
Yeah, and sometimes better than the teachers. Yeah. You know, in some cases, these kids are they're ready to lead their own classes.
Do you ever think, as you're interacting with some of these youngsters, that this person is going to be one of the next big inventors of our time?
Yeah, there's definitely BitSpace. We'll see 5, 10, 15 years from now, there's going to be some kids from BitSpace that do some cool stuff.
That's pretty cool. What have the growing pains been like for you, if any?
Well, you know, to run a summer camp, it's a there are lots of summer camps in the city, you know, that's really where we got started. But to do it at the caliber that we do it with, the expertise that we need to have, the technology that we have to have, you know, makes those operating costs, you know, higher than an average summer camp. And so coupled with what happens in the fall when kids go back to school and camp is over, you know, the big growing pain was how do we keep it going? And to do that, we've realized that the schools themselves want to do this, and now we've become a big asset to facilitating BitSpace like things in the schools.
How is that going to work? Do you transport BitSpace to these schools? Do you then train the teachers and the people at the school to really become an offshoot of BitSpace?
Yeah, in the most ideal situation, we work with schools in lots of different fashions, from casual field trips, you know, that kids come in for an hour and leave, to multi-day or even week, you know, sessions in the classroom where BitSpace comes to the school and works with the teachers and the students. But the real power of what we do now is you know, leveraging the expertise from 5 years of building our own labs and running our own labs. We now have a furniture line and a design program for helping schools to integrate Maker Labs into their schools. And then a support network of training, professional development, and an online curriculum that can facilitate, you know, doing this in the classroom during the day.
That sounds pretty expensive. All of that sounds pretty expensive. Where do you get your funding? How do you keep this going?
Well, up until now, we have been funded by my primary investor, my partner, and the work that we've done. And we're, you know, on the cusp of expanding, hopefully scaling nationwide, mm-hmm. And our in the process of figuring out how to do that.
Can you give us any hints of how you scale up like that?
Well, the online curriculum is key. You know, just the nature of the digital copy. And then that helps us to, connect on a subscription model, create a long-term relationship with a school that then brings back more labs, more projects, more furniture. And the furniture itself has been designed in such a way, you know, kind of IKEA style. We can flat pack it. It's all CNC fabricated. And so being able to deploy really highly customized furniture pieces to create unique labs. In a way, we used to do it all by hand, and every lab was unique. And so scaling has been about packaging that, prefabricating.
Is the idea to always have BitSpace involved in this, or is it something that you hope you provide the blueprint and schools will start funding this for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. You know, the real payoff for us is to be able to reach as many kids as possible. And the best way to do that is to empower other teachers and other organizers to be able to do that.
In addition to going into the schools, I see on the calendar, you do the one-day camps during the school year. So camp is not going away.
No, not at all. We're busy. BitSpace is busy all week long, all year long. Birthday parties, you know, the day-off day camps, which are vital for parents that are working. And, there's always kids at BitSpace. And that helps to support the business-to-business side, which, you know, gives us the kind of laboratory for continuing to develop the curriculum, continuing to develop the furniture.
Businesses, companies, big companies have a sort of a vested interest in making sure that these kids are smart and know how to do some of this stuff. Talk to us a little bit about how much you'd like company involvement, corporate involvement in some of this.
Yeah, corporate involvement would be great. The power of corporate involvement, obviously, to bring maybe more resources to what we do, to bring our thinking into their context. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, we often have conversations on this program about workforce training and how companies are getting more involved now and going to schools, even back to grade and middle school, to make sure that the workforce, future workforce, is trained. This seems like a nice cookie cutter approach to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean it can be, and the great thing about what we've set up too is that it's highly customizable. So the curriculum is a very modular approach, where the sort of thinking and the doing are connected, but not, you know, completely integrated. And so we're able to develop a broad range of types of programs, from, you know, schools, organizations that want to do something that's, you know, maybe more closely aligned to a traditional industrial arts program or a shop class, to something that's much more sort of intellectual and collegiate, the sort of design thinking side of things.
And this is something that all kids are interested in. Talk to us about the importance of making sure this model, what you do, is spread across the different demographies. So kids in a wealthier part of town versus a not wealthy part of town, or a richer suburb versus another.
Yeah. Again, that's the big difference in us working just with the consumer versus us working with the schools. We have labs at the University of Chicago Lab School, some of the top, most expensive schools in the country. And those kids are also the same kids that are in our admittedly, you know, relatively expensive summer camps. But at the same time, we have labs in multiple schools on the south side of Chicago that don't have, you know, those kids don't have resources. Mm-hmm. So I think being able to reach everybody is really critical. And the way to do that is to actually do it in the schools, in the public school system.
Who are your competitors in this space? Who would be one of BitSpace's competitors?
Yeah, I mean, because there's sort of two sides to the business. On the one side, we have lots of competitors. Kids Science Lab is a great company here in Chicago that offers science-based summer camps, and they kill it. They're a big competitor with respect to our summer camp offerings. And then on the sort of direct-to-school work that we do, the consulting work, there's less immediate competitors, but they're the kind of typical collection of educational service providers. And the thing that distinguishes us from those furniture, you know, lab furniture, you know, makers, is that we actually use the stuff. We know firsthand how they're supposed to be used, and we're not just, you know, designing a piece of furniture.
Yeah, and the staff that you have a very diverse staff of people who have to know a lot of different things.
Absolutely. There's art-based, engineering-based, people from architecture, software, and, you know, they all have a kind of common bond, a maker bond, a creativity that connects them all together. But yes, yeah, so everybody has their own unique specialties.
Any of the projects that have been done while you've been watching strike come out as either strange or fascinating or unbelievable?
So many fascinating projects. You know, virtual reality projects where kids turn. We have a 10-foot by 10-foot cube where we run these mixed reality, virtual reality projects. So they're kind of combining virtual reality with the physical construction. Mm-hmm. And so they're making a barista simulator where they have to, you know, take orders and fill the chai latte or whatever comes through. And, you know, it's interesting to think that you might expect that a kid's given the opportunity to make any kind of video game that they want, that they're going to make some sort of, you know, next Fortnite shoot 'em up adventure. But no, a barista simulator. So it goes to show you that the kids have some pretty unique ideas.
You've talked to us about where you'd like to see this go. Do you have a timeline for scaling up and expanding? What's your 2 or 5 or 10 year plan?
Yeah, well, the online curriculum, we've over the past year have invested a lot of resources and staff into developing this curriculum. And last I saw, I think we're up to about 20 or 25 subscribers in an initial pilot program, and really just starting some of the more recent schools that we've worked with here in Chicago for build. And that is about ready to really go live for public consumption. So over the course of the next 2 years, the goal is to see massive, hopefully, increase in subscription to that curriculum, and hopefully reaching not just outside of Chicago, but also outside of schools, libraries. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some people from a nearby university involved. So I think the next 2 years will hopefully be full of curriculum.
Is it selfish to wonder if something like this exists for adults outside of a school? Because I think I told you before we went on the air, I'm a little jealous that this wasn't around when I was young, and I could see how this would be popular among adults too.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been countless parents who have said the same thing, like, oh, could you do a night for parents? Yeah. Or I want to build the chair too.
Yeah. So let's talk to those parents just briefly while we have them listening. Some of them are probably saying, okay, number one, how can I get involved with this? How can I get my kids involved in this? And then for the corporate side of people who are also listening, mm-hmm. how can they get involved? What would you like to see from them?
Yeah, well, like I said, to be able to run projects that build on resources, corporate resources, maybe they have manufacturing capabilities or software, a team of software developers that want to work on a project with us, that can really take the already cool stuff that we do, but just amplify it. And as far as parents go, Bitspace.camp. We have stuff going on all year round. So summer camps in the summer, but when days are off school or kids want to have a birthday, Bitspace is there. And we're always looking for special projects. So if you know, you have something in mind, yeah, give us a call and we can figure out how to do it.
Thomas, this is all really exciting. Appreciate you coming in today, and all the best to you and everybody, and let's keep it going.
Thank you very much.
Thomas Kearns, the founder and director of the Bitspace, of Bitspace in Chicago. You can find them online at bitspace.camp. And we will continue our conversation with Thomas after the bell this morning and post more of that in our podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Monday here on The Opening Bell. We turn our focus now to research and development. There's been a strong uptick in research and development in Illinois. And to talk a little bit about the numbers and what's going on, Matt Bragg, Director of Data and Policy at the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition, the ISTC, a member-driven, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that bills itself as a cultivator of technology-based economic development in Illinois, based at 1871 here in Chicago. Matt, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
These are some pretty strong numbers. Give us the headline and why it's important.
Yeah, so we've, you know, as you know, I think been tracking this for many years now. And, you know, over the last few years, we've seen Illinois kind of show, you know, sluggish growth when it comes to research and development. But what, you know, is really exciting with this report, it shows that, you know, over the past year, we've grown more quickly than kind of the national average. So we've really seen an uptick, you know, in this activity that's so, you know, vital for business innovation and sort of economic growth.
A 6% jump, really, and that puts us above the national average. What's going on in Illinois that we've seen that sluggishness turn around?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really been kind of growth in a few key sectors. One that we really highlight in this report is in food. So, you know, obviously the state is, you know, large in agriculture and, you know, we have a number of Fortune 500 companies in food. And what we've seen over the last 5 years in sort of business sector R&D and food, you know, is really kind of staggering growth. We've grown from, you know, below $200 million annually in activity to now over $800 million. So a big jump there. We've also seen growth on the university side, you know, and sort of in the IT side, in business sector R&D.
Bottom line figure, $17.5 billion is the total research and development activity. Give us a sense of what that money buys and what kinds of research and development activities are underway. I mean, you mentioned food and IT. Give us a sense maybe of an example of what the research and development that's happening.
Yeah, so that's sort of on the, you know, business side. So we look at, you know, business R&D, university R&D, and then research happening at our national labs. So maybe to just give an example of, you know, what's going on the university side. So, for example, like Northwestern University just opened what is the largest R&D center, academic R&D center in the country for biotechnology, which they opened on their Chicago campus. And then sort of in quantum, which I know is kind of the new buzzword, you know, the University of Chicago has their center that they lead now called the Chicago Quantum Exchange. You know, that's really bringing together, you know, our national labs and, you know, other universities in the state and some private sector partners to really, you know, kind of put Illinois on the forefront of research in quantum.
Yeah, it's all very, very exciting. I know from the company side of things, you see some familiar names leading some of the research and development of companies like Caterpillar and Motorola Mobility, and to a lesser extent, John Deere and Boeing and some other places. And these are the Fortune 500 companies that you would expect to be there, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, the state is blessed with a large sort of cohort of Fortune 500 companies. And obviously, those larger companies conduct the vast majority of R&D. But we also have smaller companies that are doing quite a bit. When we look at something like food, which we touched on earlier, we found that we really have sort of a bustling startup ecosystem in the food space. Companies like Farmer's Fridge and Fooda and Grubhub and you could sort of go on down the list, but sort of a bustling ecosystem of startups in that space as well.
Matt, I'm curious. We talk a lot about how the economy is doing, and obviously it's doing pretty well lately. Does that have a direct correlation to what kind of research and development gets done?
Yeah, it's a good point. And obviously, we should mention that this data is delayed a couple of years, just sort of the nature of the way that this research is done. So this, latest figures for total R&D are for 2016, and university R&D is for 2017. But obviously, as the economy grows, and especially on the business side, companies have, more capital to do research and development. So obviously the activity grows as the economy grows. But in terms of, what types of R&D, I don't think it has necessarily a large effect. It's more just, sort of sector driven.
Back to the school side of this, the university side of this, one of the figures that jumped out of the report to me was the nearly 14,000 academic articles, mostly in science and engineering, but still quite a few thousand articles by Illinois universities, by researchers at Illinois universities.
Yeah, and obviously, research and development is something that's, a little bit difficult to measure, right? It's kind of a nebulous concept in terms of data. But so we measure both the input, which is basically dollars spent on research and development, as well as the output, right? So on the academic side, things like patents and licenses and academic articles, and we've seen those, really grow in the state as well. Especially when you look at sort of, per capita, per, how many researchers are actually, going out and doing this work.
In addition to the state ranking second in food R&D, third in finance and insurance R&D, that's another area that, we can focus on as well. Companies like State Farm involved there as well, right, in Allstate.
Yeah, absolutely. And, having those two giants in the insurance space, obviously helps. And I think when you look at, data on R&D in finance and insurance, we're, always near the top. And, beyond insurance, too, I mean, sort of the, finance companies that are especially, located in Chicago. Obviously, the city of Chicago is kind of the Midwest hub for that kind of activity.
We've been talking about really the positive highlights, the big positive highlights of the report. Is there anything negative in here that that you're concerned about, or the organization's concerned about moving forward?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously this uptick has been positive, and we love to see that. But it does come after a period of kind of sluggish growth in R&D for the state. So, while this is an indicator, I think, of the state heading in the right direction, it is just 1 year. So I think for us, we're kind of, we're monitoring things and hoping that, it's a trend that continues.
So what is the magic bullet here? What helps push things up as you prepare to, see future years coming on this? How will we see these numbers go up? How can we keep this, if you want to call it a winning streak, alive here?
Yeah, I don't think there's any one magic bullet. I think, as a state, the important thing is sort of, fostering an ecosystem of innovation. So, obviously research and development is kind of a part of that and almost an outcome of having a strong economy in that sense. But, just keep working on things like STEM talents, making sure that we have, the people coming out of our universities that can jump into our workforce and do this kind of activity. And then supporting entrepreneurship is obviously key as well, making sure that, people are sort of have the tools they need to start companies and the money they need to grow companies. And then, those are sort of some of the aspects I think that can come together and grow us as kind of an innovation economy in the state.
You mentioned something there that I think is important to pull out, workforce talent, and not only that, but school talent as well. Is Illinois getting the kind of talent that it needs? There's been some concern nationally that with immigration changes and other things happening, that maybe that talent pool is drying up just a little bit. Is there any concern statewide about that?
You know, I think there's been some anecdotal kind of worries about that. We haven't seen that in the data as of yet. Obviously, you know, immigration is key to, I think, attracting talent to the state of Illinois. And we're certainly supportive of making sure that, you know, universities in the state are able to attract talent, you know, not only nationally, but internationally. But, you know, we haven't seen that as being a key issue as of yet, although, you know, it's certainly a concern. But on the talent side, you know, we also write a talent report of this Illinois Innovation Index and have sort of seen the growth of computer science and some of these, you know, more tech-driven fields grow in the state. So, you know, I think the key for a state like ours, who, you know, we do have some really, you know, world-renowned research universities and produce some top talent. So the key for us is really retaining that talent, right? Keeping those graduates from our, you know, quality universities to stay in the state and work on things like, you know, research and development.
Yeah, we're lucky in that regard. You have, as we've mentioned, all these names, not only the schools, but the companies as well. It really is a place that people, even if talent does shrink a little bit, this is the place. These are the companies, people, and schools that people want to go to.
Right, exactly. And I think we're blessed in that sense where we do have sort of a center of gravity, certainly for the Midwest in terms of, you know, companies that are located here. I mean, we talked about food and finance and insurance, but, you know, sort of across the board, I think we're very fortunate and we're not, you know, too focused in any particular sector. We're pretty well diversified on that front. So, you know, certainly I think that will continue. So very, very fortunate for that.
All right, Matt. Thank you very much for getting up with us this morning and sharing this information. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
All right, Matt Bragg, Director of Data and Policy at the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. It's the Illinois Innovation Index, the R&D issue, $17.5 billion in total research and development activity in 2016, up nearly $1 billion over 2015. You can find the full report at istcoalition.org. That's istcoalition.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures up 145 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. NASDAQ futures up almost three quarters this morning. On new hope that there might be some trade talks coming with China. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the half century of progress show at Rantoul ended yesterday. And I do want to say thank you to the tent full of people that came to spend an hour with Max Armstrong and me. We enjoyed visiting with you. And then today is a day off, but tomorrow the three-day Farm Progress Show gets underway. That will be at Decatur, Illinois, and it's looking like pretty good weather at the moment. We'll plan to be there all 3 days. The big news in the world trade situation yesterday: the United States and Japan agreed in principle to core elements of a trade deal that President Trump and Prime Minister Abe said they hope to sign in New York next month. The agreement, if finalized, would cool a trade dispute between the two allies. But Japan is importing a good deal of the U.S. products, $14 billion worth of U.S. agricultural products last year, and the National Pork Producers Council said it welcomed the deal. We look forward to rapid implementation of the agreement as international competitors are currently taking U.S. pork market share through more favorable access. That from David Herring, who is president of the National Pork Producers Council. So again, tomorrow, 3 days, Farm Progress Show at Decatur. Max Armstrong will be at different venues at the show. And every morning at 10 o'clock, I'll be on stage at the University of Illinois display at Farm Progress. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. We want to update the situation with the U.S. and China this morning at the G7 summit in France, the president just speaking a moment ago about whether or not there really was a call from China last night about getting back to the table. The president saying, actually, it was the Treasury Secretary next to him saying there have been discussions recently about whether or not there would be talks coming. This follows immediately because of the Chinese Foreign Ministry this morning not saying anything about a phone call. Talking instead about how the Chinese will react if the president moves forward with $550 billion in imports, raising tariffs on that money, on those goods. China, the foreign ministry says, is not afraid of any threats or intimidation. We strongly urge the U.S. not to misjudge the situation and immediately stop the wrongful act. That was the foreign ministry in China this morning. So lots of questions about where we're at with China this morning. We'll see that play out this morning on Wall Street. Stay tuned for all of the numbers as we move forward in the morning. Let's look at the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, August the 26th. The July durable goods order is report is out today. Analysts do see some growth slowing. The experts are forecasting growth of 0.8%. That would be down from 2% growth in June. Also today, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index. We'll also get the Germany Business Climate Index, so we'll see how the Eurozone, at least Germany, is performing in the Eurozone. On the earnings calendar today, FlexSteel Industries, Cancer Genetics Incorporated, and Tough Built Industries reporting quarterly earnings. So some things that could move the markets on this Monday, August the 26th.